saw four red dots shining ahead of us.
"What's that?" whispered Nas. "Are those lights? Sensors?"
"You check it out," I said. "I'll wait here and cover you." Maz made an adjustment to the lenses of her big goggles. Then she peered into the darkness as if she could see better and walked straight forward. "Maz, I don't think..." I started to say. Then something furry leapt at us from the shadows. It had a wide mouth full of sharp teeth, its jaws opened wide. But it did not eat Maz. The wiry little pirate ducked and rolled backward, and the jaws snapped on empty air. When I had recovered my composure, I saw what it was she had so narrowly avoided. A Nexu! Maz approached within centimeters of its mouth.
"It's on a chain," she said.
The creature glared at us with each of its four eyes and growled, but Maz was right. It couldn't reach her. It was straining at the edge of a large chain hammered into the rock wall. But if Maz had been even a half meter taller, she would have been gobbled up before she could have rolled away. "That's it," I said. "Time to leave." Ignoring both me and the snarly beastie, Maz turned in a circle.
"Ah," she said, "the passage doubles back here."
I followed her, being very cautious as I passed the nasty Nexu. Sure enough, another passageway led back around, just before the limit of the creature's reach.
"Clever," said Maz. "You can't see the way until you walk past it. But if you don't know about the Nexu, you walk too far and get eaten."
"Clearly whoever lives here doesn't like company," I said. "So maybe we should turn around."
"Handa Onaka, if you turn around now, I'll skin your hide and fly it as a flag over my castle next to the Onaka gang one," she said.
"Well, if you're going to put it that way," I said, "I guess I could stick around a bit more. After all, I am very fond of my hide. I am attached to it, you might say." Mas did not respond to my joke. But after a little while, the passageway widened into a large cavern, the far wall of which had been worked smooth and set with a large metal door. Two guards stood there, a human and a Twi'lek. There was no use in hiding. We had been seen. So I gave them my best smile and walked up. "Hold it right there," the Twi'lek said. "What's today's password?" "Ah, the password," I said. Then I waggled my fingers in front of their faces. "You do not need to know the password." I spoke slowly and calmly. "Yes, yes, we do," said the human guard. "No, you don't. You do not need to know the password," I said again, and I waggled my fingers some more. "You want to let me enter? You will tell me that I can go about my business." The Twi'lek blinked at me. Then he spoke to his companion.
"I think he's trying to use a Jedi mind trick on us. Are you trying to use a mind trick on us?"
"That depends," I asked. "Is it working?"
"Not so much, no," said the Twi'lek.
"I don't see a lightsaber," said the human guard.
"Don't you know you have to be a Jedi to do that trick?"
"Well," I replied, "I've had so many dear friends that were Jedi, I was hoping maybe some of their jumbo mumbo had rubbed off."
"Hey, if you don't have the password," said the Twi'lek, "then you've got bigger problems."
And he started to unholster his blaster. "Time for Plan M," I said.
"Don't you mean Plan B?" the human replied.
"No," I replied. "I mean Plan M, for Maz." Then I stepped aside, and behind me the guard saw Maz Kanata holding up Chewbacca's bowcaster.
"I'd be worried if I were you boys," she said. "I don't actually know how to work this thing."
"Why would that worry us?" said the Twi'lek.
"Because I'm trying to remember if it's possible to set bowcasters to stun, and I don't think that's the case."
After that, the guards saw the wisdom of setting aside their blasters and letting us tie them up. Sometimes a good bowcaster is better than a mind trick. Then we slipped through the doors, and there they were, Han Solo and Chewbacca. They were suspended in the air, their arms up, like puppets without any strings. And all around the room, I saw many unsavory ruffians. But that was not the center of our attention. There were a host of spacecraft there, and droids were busy tearing them to pieces for the various parts and components.
"This is the Chop Shop," said Maz. "Right here on Takodana." "Let's be very quiet," I said to Maz. "They haven't noticed us yet." "No one operates a chop shop right under my nose," said Maz. And then she yelled, "Yah!"
and charged forward with the bowcaster. Well, that got the ruffians' attention fast. Of course, Maz is very famous, and we were on her planet. So quite a few of the ruffians were just standing there gaping at the crazy orange lady bearing down on them. But then one of them, who had a dark, striated skin of a Delphidian, pointed a finger and yelled, "Stop her!" Well, Maz was not to be stopped. She hefted Chewbacca's bowcaster, and she fired a plasma energy quarrel. It missed the Delphidian, but it sure made a big explosion where it hit some cargo crates. They went kaboom-a-de-boom and blew apart in pieces. Unfortunately, they were not the only things that flew. The little pirate lady was flung backward through the air, and she crashed right into my torso, knocking the wind out of these old lungs. We both went down in a heap of brown and orange limbs. Glancing up, I saw that Maz and I were at the center of a ring of very unfriendly faces. Worse, we were also at the center of a ring of blaster barrels. We were captured. "Well, Maz," I said, "you think you made a good enough first impression?"
Chapter 14. Hondo the Hero.
"Don't think I'm not happy to see you, Maz," said Han Solo. "But this is about the worst rescue I've been in."
"Roar,"
said Chewbacca, which meant, "and that's saying something," in Shriwook. We were all hanging in the air then, our arms over our heads and our legs dangling above the ground. It was actually quite good for my back, but I worried that might not matter very soon.
"You wouldn't need rescuing at all," said Maz, "if you'd played things a little smarter."
"Hey, you asked me to find out what's going on, didn't you?" said Solo. "Now you know."
"That wasn't what I meant." "Oh, never mind," said Maz. "Look who I'm talking to."
"Well, I thought that was sort of a rough thing to say to your boyfriend, to be sure, but I didn't have long to ponder. The Delphidian approached us. "Name's Tejipo Juibap," he said with a nasty grin. "I'm the boss of the Hackjackers, but you're Maz Kanata." He gave the little orange lady an appraising look where she hung in the air.
"I must say, it's an honor to have the Pirate Queen in my hideout."
"What about the honor of the famous Pirate Hondo Onaka?" I asked. "Do I look like Chop Convor Liver?" "Not everything is about you," said Solo. Then he spoke to Tejipo. "By the way, I'm Han Solo, famous smuggler, hero of the rebellion." said Chewbacca, not one to be left out. Tejipo shrugged.
"The more the merrier, I suppose," he said. "We weren't ready to move against you yet, Maz, but now we won't have to."
Maz snorted.
"If you thought you were in trouble before," she said, "you've got no idea the trouble you've just bought yourself, mister."
Tejipo laughed.
"Well, I think I've just bought myself a castle," he said. "We'll enjoy taking control of the whole planet now, and there's not a thing you can say about it."
"I might have a word to say myself," I said. Tejipo looked at me then.
"A word?" he said. "What word?"
"Carbuncle," I replied.
Carbuncle? Repeated Solo. What kind of word is that?
But Tejibo's eyes were going wide in his striated face. Well, Miles was smarter than Solo. The credit chip dropped for her before the smuggler figured it out.
Hondo, you old traitor! She yelled.
Why? What's he done? Said Solo. What's carbuncle mean?
Mars fixed me with an angry look.
I'm guessing it's today's password, she explained.
Wait, said Tejibo, and he fixed me with a surprised eye. You're my buyer?
You son of a bantha, yelled Solo. I thought you were here to rescue us.
Rescue? Well, I said, technically I was more riding along on the rescue, like an observer. Mars is the real rescuer, so it is her fault it didn't work. Well, Mars, Chewbacca, and especially Han Solo really had some unkind things to say about yours truly, while the hackjackers lowered me.
I suppose I deserve a small part of that, maybe, I said. But I didn't know you were going to go and get yourselves kidnapped. I was just on Takodana to see about purchasing some ships and ship components. It was a perfectly legitimate, illegitimate business deal before you three had to go and get yourselves involved.
That set off another stream of very nasty things said about poor Hondo, and I didn't really like hearing them.
Well, I can't hang around here, I said.
Then I realized they were all still hovering above me.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean hang. I just can't leave things with the Jeepo up in the air. Oh, sorry. I mean, it's not like our business negotiations can be suspended. Oh, sorry.
Sometimes you have to quit while you are ahead. So, I left my friends fuming at me, and I walked off with Tejibo to see what ships and ship parts he had for sale. He really had quite an operation going, and I saw many fine things. Flechette torpedoes, sensor jammers, enhanced scopes, so much that a pirate could want. I was like that kid in a candy store again. Only just then, I heard a commotion high above us. I looked and saw two droids pulling a curtain of hanging vines aside. I realized I was seeing a cavern opening, disguised with vegetation to be invisible from the outside. And gliding through that newly revealed opening was the Millennium Falcon.
Hey, that's my ship, called Solo.
But nobody paid him any attention. A little Yuuzhan scurried down the boarding ramp.
We found her parked outside, boss,
the Yuuzhan said. The Jeepo walked up to the ship, sizing her up, looking very pleased.
Quad laser cannons, a rugged ST-2 concussion missile tubes, a Blastec AX-108 blaster cannon, duralloy plates, and three deflector shield generators,
explained the Yuuzhan. The Jeepo whistled.
That's quite a prize, boys, he called to his gang. Let's start breaking her down. Get away from my ship,
Solo yelled again. But he really couldn't do anything but yell.
I, however, was shocked. Breaking her down, I exclaimed. The Jeepo, my friend, don't you know what this is?
Sure, he replied, blinking at me. It's a Corellian YT-1300 light freighter.
No, I said. This is the famous ship, the Millennium Falcon.
It's old, he said, and it looks like it's barely holding together as it is.
But the ship, it has a history. It fought in the rebellion. It blew up the Death Star.
Two Death Stars,
shouted Solo.
The Jeepo shrugged.
It made the Kessel Run in less than 14 parsecs, I added.
12 parsecs, shouted Solo.
It's an antique, said Tejibo. Junk. Trust me, it'll be worth a lot more in pieces.
Pieces, yelled Solo,
but I nodded. After all, it was a very old ship. And I had lots of opportunity to make some good negotiations that day. Still, I felt sad, and Hondo does not like to feel sad. So I walked away to see what goodies I could find to interest me. Behind me, I heard the noise of a fusion cutter powering up. The depot's men were already starting in on the Falcon. I looked back, and I stopped. I just stood there watching. I couldn't turn away. When the fusion cutter sank into the Falcon's hull, I thought I could hear the old bird screaming. I told myself it was just the noise of the fusion beams. But I knew it was my favorite ship in the whole galaxy dying. "Oh, well," I said. "Nothing lives forever." The Jeepo overheard me say that and laughed. He thought I was talking about the Falcon. But no, I was talking about myself. I excused myself for a moment to think over our negotiations. I pocketed a little fusion cutter, just a small one, good for cutting chains. And when no one was watching, I slipped back into the tunnel. I picked my way through the dark until I'd reached the fearsome beast on the chain. I held up the fusion cutter and steeled myself for what I had to do. Well, you should have seen all their faces when the Nexo came bursting out of the tunnel. It was all snarly and snappy, and its little red eyes were full of hate. Not for Hondo. Hondo had freed it. Hate for poor Tejipo and his Hak-Chaka gang. There was shouting and screaming and some crunching and snapping. In all the confusion, no one paid attention to old Hondo when he made his way to his companions. "Let me get you down, my friends," I said as I turned off the containment field and brought Solo, Chewbacca, and Mars tumbling to the floor. Mars didn't hesitate. She snatched up Chewbacca's discarded bowcaster. Then she gave me a dirty look. For a moment, I thought maybe I was on the wrong end of a plasma quarrel. "Mars," I said, trying to laugh and be friendly, "didn't you learn the first time? What are you doing with that bowcaster?"
"Giving it back to my boyfriend where it belongs," she said,
and she handed it to Chewbacca. "Boyfriend? Chewbacca? Not Solo?" I was dumbfounded. But as I said, it takes all types to make the galaxy go round. Then Solo was in my face. "Don't think I'm not going to pay you back for this. You..." "Yes, yes," I said, interrupting him. "We can negotiate my rescue fee when this is over." "Rescue fee?" he cried. "That's not what I meant." But then a blaster bolt flew between us, striking the cavern wall. At least some of Tejipo's gang were not occupied by the Nexu and had noticed our escape. "We'll figure it out later," said Solo. I nodded. He recovered his blaster, and the fun began. I say fun, but what I mean is shots firing everywhere. Pa-choo, pa-choo, and the Nexu clawing and biting, and the Hak-Chaka screaming. We made a break for the Falcon, which fortunately was mostly still intact, while Chewbacca laid down some covering fire with his bowcaster. And we almost made it. But then there was Tejipo. He had a big gun, a DLT-19 heavy blaster rifle, and he was pointing it at us. Well, Solo fired his blaster just to pass time, and we dove behind some cargo crates. Tejipo did the same. "Give up!" Tejipo called. "You first," I answered. I popped up for a look, but a bolt of plasma energy had me ducking for cover again. Solo and Chewbacca both tried to get shots off without success. "He's too well covered," said Mars, "and we're pinned down." Solo nodded, but then his eyes went to something past Tejipo. A rack of stolen weapons and other bits and bobs behind the shipjacker. "Just keep him talking," Solo said, and he began to move slowly around the corner of the cargo crates. "Tejipo, my friend," I called. "There is still a way to profit from this day, I am sure." "You made a mess of my operations," he called back. "And now you want to talk to me about profits?" "I always want to talk about profits," I said, raising my head again. "That is what makes me a businessman, and not a run-of-the-mill scum like you. Hey,
I resent that, said Tajipo, and he stood up and fired at me.
But that was the distraction Han Solo needed. He returned fire, but he was not aiming at Tajipo, who still had very good cover. No, he was aiming at that rack of weapons and other bits and bobs he had spotted behind Tajipo. Specifically, he was aiming at the shelf of concussion bombs. And he hit them. And then everything was going boom, kaboom. Well, we raced to the Falcon, and I ran to the cockpit and started to sit in the pilot's chair. Someone grabbed me by the collar and jerked me back. My ship, my chair, said Solo, his finger in my face. Of course, your ship. I was just warming it up for you. After all, it's your chair. And don't you forget it, he said. Then we were taking off into the sky, leaving behind, well, let's just say that Tajipo, Juibop, and the Hackjackers were out of business permanently. Back at Mars's castle, things were only a little less violent.
Explain yourself, yelled Mars. You were the buyer for the stolen ships.
I didn't know they were stolen. She rolled her tiny eyes at that. Okay, I knew they were stolen, but I didn't know they were stolen from here. I am insulted that you think I did. And anyway, you cannot prove it. They were going to chop up my ship, said Han. Rrrr, said Chewbacca. And I don't need to translate that for you to know he was angry. Friends, I said, whatever you think I may have intended to do, I did just save you all at considerable risk to myself. And more important, I saved the Millennium Falcon. Well, they couldn't argue with that. Actually, they could, particularly when I brought up the fee for my services. I could tell that I should postpone that conversation for another time. I'll just leave now, shall I? I said. You can all pay me back later. And in Chewbacca's case, he did.
Second interlude. Batuu. Hondo stopped speaking and took a big sip of his drink. Wonderful, wonderful, he said, leaning back in his chair and propping a foot on the table.
The drink is that good? Asked Basim.
What? Replied the old pirate. No, the drink is fine, but I was referring to my storytelling abilities. You know, if I did not already have a successful career as a pirate, I bet I could make a go of it writing holodramas. What do you think?
You want to know what I think?
That is why I asked.
I think it's time you took me to see the Falcon, said Basim.
Hondo frowned. He had been fishing for praise and gotten none. Then he looked over Basim's shoulder, scanning the cantina crowd. Basim turned to follow his eyes. She couldn't place where he was looking, but she did notice the little Yarkorin from the card table had re-entered the room. Yarkorin caught her gaze, and he ducked quickly back outside. Basim turned back to the Weequay.
So, you've told me why you think the ship is special, and you've told me about how you flew her. Can we negotiate a price now?
Almost, said the old pirate. You must be patient.
I've been very patient so far, snapped Basim.
Then you know how to do it, said Hondo through a big smile. Relax, I just have one final story.
Just one? Sighed Basim.
Just one. How the ship that I so wanted to steal on so many occasions finally came into my possession. And it was freely given. Freely given with a catch.
Part 3. Attack of the Porgs. Chapter 15. I finally get the Falcon.
The last time I encountered the Millennium Falcon, I didn't have to steal it.
They actually gave it to me. That's right. They gave the falcon to Hondo. One day, when I least expected it, who should contact me out of the blue but Chewbacca? I was surprised to see his furry little hologram growling at me. I was also sad to learn that my dear friend Han Solo was no longer with him, having gone to that great smuggler's den in the sky. But there was Chewbacca, nonetheless, saying that I, Hondo, was his only hope. Yes, he had come to me. You see, the Wookiee was having problems with his Quadex power core. I understand it had given him trouble in the past, and it was beginning to go out completely. But the Falcon is a very old ship, and as you know, it has been heavily customized. So replacement parts that will actually fit and that will talk to her persnickety computer systems were getting harder and harder for Chewbacca to find. So, after scouting around unsuccessfully for a few weeks, the Wookiee and his new partner, a new Jedi named Ray somebody, turned to old Hondo to see if I could acquire the necessary component. And of course, I could. There is nothing Hondo cannot acquire. And I was more than willing to help out my old friend. For the right price, of course. Naturally, I wanted a favor in return. I was thinking of starting a new business venture. Onaka Transport Solutions. Doesn't that name roll off the tongue? And although I had amassed many fine ships already, such a fast vessel would be useful in establishing my operation. At least until I got things off the ground, so to speak. And since the Falcon had to be fixed anyway, and Chewbacca owed me for my rescue of him and Han Solo, he was more than happy to lend me his vessel for a while. Though he acted reluctant. In fact, he drove a hard bargain. I had to throw in some ship parts and tools that he said would help out some of his friends, in addition to the power core. But I'm sure that underneath all that grouchy fur, he was actually very pleased. Still, he said something odd to me in Shriwook as he handed over the ship. Now, as I said, I speak the Wookiee language with a bit of an accent, and there are nuances of meaning that sometimes elude me. What it sounded like he was saying was, "Don't mind about all the porgs." But that couldn't be right. Could it? "Watch out for the ports?" I asked. "What's wrong with the ports? Is there a pressure leak?"
"Porgs," growled Chewbacca. "Porgs."
So, I had heard him correctly. Porgs. But I had no idea what he was talking about. "Porgs," I said. "What's a porg?" Chewbacca held up his furry hands like he was packing an invisible ball, and then he flapped his fingers, flappity-flap, and he made a kind of cooing noise.
"Brrr,
he said. "I don't know what you mean, my friend," I said. "Are you making pretend meatballs?"
"Brrr,"
he said again. I shrugged. After a moment, Chewbacca did too. He had given up on trying to make himself understood, so he shook his fuzzy head and walked away. But I thought maybe I heard him laughing. As he left me, I stared after him, wondering what was so amusing. And just for a second, I thought I saw something stirring at that satchel hanging from his bandolier. Was it a hint of fluffy movement? Something small peeking out at me? I could not be sure. Oh well, I thought. I guess it doesn't matter. Whatever a porg is, the ship is mine. But as you will see, it mattered very much. Oh, but it felt good to be alone in the cockpit. And the Falcon didn't fight me so much that time as I powered her up. Perhaps she knew that old Hondo was going to fix her up ship-shape and she was excited for the trip. I lifted off, and I set the course for Batu. It was a little bit of a stretch to get from where I had met Chewbacca all the way across the outer rim to the edge of wild space. So I was going to have to make two or three jumps at least. But right then, I was feeling peckish. So, after plotting the first jump, I went to find the ship's galley, looking for something to eat. Well, I discovered the refrigerator unit. It was an untidy mess, and I began to rifle through the foodstuffs. I found blue bantha buttermilk biscuits, blue Bespin breakfast bars, blue puff cubes. Was everything eatable on this ship blue? Well, not everything. There were some packets of polystarch dehydration ration packs, but I wouldn't feed that to my worst enemy. The pickings were pretty slim. But old Hondo knows a thing or two about the culinary arts, so I decided to sauté one of the blue puff cubes in lyseed seasoning and see how it was. Just one for a test. I set it simmering, and I went to check on my flight path. But as I exited the galley, I got that creepy, crawly feeling that I was being watched, like little buggies up and down the neck. I turned around, but there was no one there. So I went to the cockpit, everything in order, and I headed back to the galley. I could smell the lyseed simmering. My cooking instincts were correct. This was going to be good. But when I returned, the blue puff cube was gone. Where did it go? I had never cooked with puff cubes before. Did it melt away entirely? I took another out of the refrigeration unit and I tossed it in the cooker. Well, it simmered away, but it did not disappear. And then there it was again, behind me, that feeling of someone looking at my back. I spun around. Nothing. I spun back. And the blue puff cube was gone again. Is someone playing a joke on old Hondo? I called out. If so, it is not funny. And I threw another blue puff cube into sauté. I watched it the whole time it cooked. I didn't take my eyes off it. Not until it was done. Not even then. I got a plate, but I still watched. I put it on the plate. I sat down at the table. I cut a piece, and I took a bite. And oh, it was so good. I closed my eyes for just a moment to savor the flavor. When I opened them again, the plate was empty. Nothing but a lonely lyseed and some oil. Now, Hondo was starting to feel a little nervous. Was I not alone? Was the Millennium Falcon haunted? Solo, I called. Is that you? You are not trying to spook your old pal Hondo, are you? Surely not. You're not still mad that I tried to steal your ship? Twice? Maybe three times? Come on now! Let bygones be bygones! There was no answer, and I felt very silly. But whatever was happening, I was going to find out. So very carefully, I put another blue puff cube in the cooker. Then I went to a storage unit and got in. And I left the door open just a tiny crack, and I watched. And there it was, a blur of white and brown, a flappity flap of wings. A creature swooped down from the ceiling and snatched my puff cube away. Aha! I yelled, rushing out. I've got you! And I pounced. Ah, ah, ah! The little creature chirped. I grabbed for it, but it flapped over my head. And then there was movement behind me. Well, I wasn't falling for that again, no. But then more of the little things came flapping, flapping from under my legs. And to the left and right of me, they were bursting out of the very storage closet I had been hiding in. I was waving my arms and stumbling in my hurry to get away from the closet. What were these creatures? Two of them were on the counter. One had one end of the bag of blue puff cubes in its little fuzzy snout, and the other had the bag by the other side. "Give that here!" I shouted, and I grabbed the bag and snatched it away. And then suddenly, Everything was quiet again. And the little things were all staring at me with these big brown eyes.
So, you guys must be the porgs that Chewbacca warned me about, I said. Well, you're not going to get the better of old Hondo. They all blinked at once at that. It was kind of creepy and a little bit sad. Then the first one, the one who had stolen all my puff cubes, suddenly jumped in a little burst of flight, and he grabbed the bag right out of my hand. And away he went, racing down the corridor on flappy little feet. "Come back with that, you thief!" I cried. I don't know why I said it, as the one who has stolen many things myself. I know that no thief anywhere has ever come back when someone yelled at them, "Come back here with that, you thief!" But there I was, yelling those words at a sneaky little bird. I ran down the corridor into the lounge. Nothing. No sign of the pesky creature. Come out, wherever you are," I said. I pulled my blaster out, but what was I thinking? Because you don't want to fire a blaster inside a spaceship. So I set it down on a nearby container, and I looked around. He was not in the storage locker. He was not in a basket. Where could he be? Someone, I saw, had left a holochess table on. All the little holograms were just standing still, waiting for the players to make a move. No, wait. One of the little holograms was not little. It was quite larger than the others. It was bigger than the Kintan Striders. It was bigger than the Mantellian Savrip, and it had fluffy little wings. I walked over, really quiet-like. Nothing moved. Those big brown eyes were staring straight ahead and not blinking. It was almost comical the way he was standing so still. I got down on a knee. "Aha!" I exclaimed. "You are no hologram!" With a squawk, the pug leapt into the air, its little flippers scraping across my hat. I saw the bag of blue puff cubes under the holochest table, so I snatched it up, and then I was running down the corridor. Well, the pug scurried into the cockpit, and so I did too. "This is the end of the line for you, my friend," I said. And I am using the word friend very liberally, because I do not feel very friendly to you, you little pest. But then the pug turned and sort of meeped, and I looked out the viewport. The Falcon had come out of hyperspace and was waiting for me to plot the next jump. But there was a ship right in front of me, a pirate ship. And that's when I heard a boarding clamp locking onto my airlock. "Meep is right," I said to the pug. "It looks like we are having company." I started back down the corridor, the pog trailing along behind me. And behind him, a whole bunch of other pogs. I felt like I had a very strange crew indeed. We got to the airlock just as it popped open with a ka-chunk of shifting metal and escaping gas. "Now let me do the talking," I said to the pogs. "Hondo has been all over this galaxy, and many villainous scum are dear friends of mine. So, I'm sure whoever it is will understand the mistake in boarding this ship when they see me. Everything will be all..." Well, the words died in my mouth. Because who in all the galaxy should be facing me but that Pachyphanto scum, Trunk Adarmush? He was, of course, much older than when I'd last seen him. One of his tusks was broken, and it looked like something had taken a bite out of one of his big flappy ears. But I gave him my best smile. "Trunk," I said, "my old friend, imagine running into you here. I am so glad to see you up and around, given that the years have obviously not been kind." Trunk frowned at that, but then he smiled. It was not a nice smile. "Hondo Onaka," he said. "Well, isn't this a great day in the morning? We get our hands on the Millennium Falcon, and
We get to pay you back for all that trouble you gave me all those years ago. Then Trunk turned to two more Pakifantos pirates and said, Grab him, boys! Well, my hand went to my blaster then. But instead of my blaster, I pulled out a bag of blue puff cubes. You see, I had set down my blaster in the lounge, and I had holstered the puff cubes by mistake. It's the little details that get you into trouble, I may have said before. Trunk looked at the bag of blue puff cubes strangely for a minute. I've already eaten, he said, but thanks. And then I was being unceremoniously bundled away out of the Falcon and into Trunk's much larger ship. Help, Porgy Porgies, I cried, but craning my neck, I saw no sign of the little feathered critters. They had vanished. And then, as easily as I had gotten the Falcon, I lost her.
Chapter 16. Puffy to the Rescue. Well, they bundled me down the hallway pretty fast, and into a holding cell I went.
You can stew here until we figure out how we're going to get rid of you, said Trunk.
Stew would be very nice, I said. My lunch keeps getting interrupted.
You'll live, said Trunk. Though maybe not for very long.
And then he laughed at his poor joke, and he left me alone, without even a glass of water. Despondent, I looked at the bag of blue puff cubes. They were pretty crumpled. After my unjust and very rough treatment by the Pakifantos. What's more, there was a hole in the wrapping when one of those pesky winged fur balls had torn it open with its little sharp teeth. At least half the contents of the package had been spilled. This is just perfect, I thought. I am a prisoner. I've lost the Falcon. I'm going to be put to death. And I never even got to have lunch. I sat there for a while, wondering what I could do. Well, the Pakifantos left to search and secure the Falcon. And then I had that feeling again, you know, of someone watching me. I looked up, and there on the other side of my bars, it was that Porg, the first one, the lunch thief. A fat little guy with orange plumage around his big eyes. He cocked his head to the side and looked at me. At least I thought it was a he. And then he kind of brrrr at me. It's you, isn't it? I said. Come to gloat at me in my misery? Brrrr, said the Porg. Ah, I said, looking where the big brown eyes were pointing. You just want more puff cubes. You don't care about old Hondo at all, you selfish creature. Well, you can go hungry, said the Porg. And that time he looked all sad and mopey. Oh, stop it, I said. I can't stand to see a Porg cry, even if I didn't know what a Porg was until this morning. So I tossed the puff cube through the bars, and he snapped it up so quick, he almost knocked it from the air. I tossed another, and the little Porg leapt to catch it. But in his enthusiasm, he banged against the control panel to my cell. That gave old Hondo an idea. So I took a third puff cube, and I reached between the bars. And the Porg shot into the air and snatched it out of my fingers. Not so fast, you greedy little puffball, I said. That is not what I had in mind at all. So I was more careful with the next one. I kept my fist closed as I slipped my hand through the bars, and I tossed the puff cube just so. The Porg pounced after it. He bounced off the control panel, and I got a nice electric shock for my efforts. Wrong button, I shouted, but I was happy. I knew the principle of my idea was sound. So we tried again. And again. And again. I got shocked a few more times, and I worried that maybe the little fellow was going to fill up on blue puff cubes. But I should not have worried. He was a bottomless pit for the staff. Finally, it happened. I tossed the cube directly onto the correct touch button, and he lunged right at it. And the bars to my cell slid open. I was free! Well, that changed my feelings about Porgs considerably, I can tell you. Thank you, my little friend, I called. And I gave him another blue puff cube. He puffed up at that and made another prrr-prrr sound. I'm going to call you Puffy, I said. Now let's get out of here, Puffy. Quietly now. We tiptoed out into the corridor, and there was a whole flock of Porgs, all walking down the hallway with their fat little waddles, prrr-prrr-prrr, they were cooing. Well, they saw the bag of blue puff cubes and all leapt at me. So then Ondo was running down the hallway in a cloud of flapping wings and the hungry squawks of plump little birdies. Hold it right there, someone said. I pushed flying Porgs aside, and I faced one of Trunk's minions. She was raising her blaster. I tossed a blue puff cube not at the Puckyphantos, but at a control panel. Puffy did his thing, and a blaster slammed into place, with the Puckyphantos on the other side. Good Puffy, I said. Someone has earned another puff cube. Well, Hondo and his cloud of Porgs made it to a weapons locker, and little Puffy, he just jumped at the panel without even being told. Then I had a blaster. After a moment's reflection, I turned the setting to stun. I wouldn't want you to see anything too upsetting, I said to little Puffy. And then we were creeping down the corridor toward the Falcon. Or maybe I should say jeeping down the corridor. Because the plump little brown-eyed birdies were making a huge amount of noise. Two of Trunk's gang heard us, but pew, pew, I went, and down they fell. Then the Porgies ran them over, planting little Porg feet on big Puckyphantos faces. And we were on our way. As you might expect, I had to go pew, pew, a few more times, and Puffy, he was crashing into every control panel he saw. If it was on the wall and it lit up, then he would smash into it with tremendous enthusiasm. And all those other little Porgies, they were doing the same thing. They had been watching my Puffy and learning. Soon, they were flinging themselves into the control panels with wild abandon. And maybe not such good aim. Blast doors were rising and lowering. Lights were blinking on and off. Alarms were sounding whoop, whoop, whoop. Obviously, this attracted some attention. Two more of Trunk's gang fired at us, and I had to run again. Unfortunately, I took a wrong turn into the cockpit of the ship. A Puckyphantos leapt up from the pilot's chair. I grabbed his trunk and yanked down on it, smashing his head into the dashboard of the ship. Sorry, my friend, I said as he passed out, but if you're going to walk around with such an obvious handle for a nose, someone is going to use it. But then the Porgs washed over me. The cockpit dashboard, it was covered with so many shiny control panels to entice my hungry little friends. They were hopping and jumping all over the place, hurtling into everything that glowed or blinked. Maneuvering thrusters began to fire up. I heard a hyperspace drive power up and power down. A shout deeper in the ship and a rush of air made me wonder if an airlock had been compromised. Then someone screamed, "What have you done to my ship?" I looked, and there was Trunk Adamush. He was having to steady himself in the doorway of the cockpit because the ship was rocking so badly. I was standing in the middle of a swarm of Porgs. A stunned Puckyphantos lay at my feet. And all the buttons in the cockpit of the rocking ship were going blinky-blink. I imagine this looks bad, I said with a smile. What are you smiling for? Asked Trunk. Sometimes a smile is all you need to turn a frown upside down, I said. Yeah, well, I'll smile once I've peppered you with holes, said Trunk. And then he pointed his blaster at me in a most unfriendly manner. Pepper? I said. That reminds me. You know, this never would have happened if you hadn't interrupted my lunch. And then I held up the bag of blue puff cubes, and I tore it open in his face. And all the little porgies leapt at him, brewing and brewing away. Get them off! Get them off! Screamed Trunk. Why, Trunk, I said. Whatever is the matter? Get them off! He yelled again. And then I realized. Are you afraid of birdies? I asked. Yes! He screamed amid a mass of wings. Get them off! But I didn't get them off. No. I shoved him aside, and I ran for the falcon. Come on, my little friends, I said. And the porgies all raced after me. Again, we were running down the corridors. Ba-doo, ba-doo! The blaster bolts were flying behind us. And we almost made it to the falcon. The ship was rocking so badly that I thought the little porgs must have messed with the high-mass electromagnetic gyroscopes. It also sounded like the ion engines, and the retro thrusters were firing in opposition to each other, trying to pull Adamush's ship apart. Beside me flapped Puffy, which was starting to look uncomfortable. In fact, the little guy was burping. But right before I reached the Falcon, I slipped on a stray puff cube, no less, and down I went. And then Trunk appeared, standing over me, with his blaster pointed at my face. This is as far as you go, Hondo Onaka, he said. If it's all the same to you, I replied, I would like to go just a little bit farther. Nice try, he said with a chuckle. But I don't think so. No, it's time to put you out of my misery for good. Any last words? Last words, I said. Let me think. If I was going to have last words, I needed to make them count. Then I looked up for inspiration, and I saw, perched all along the bulkheads, my little friends. Only they were all starting to look uncomfortable, gassy, and maybe embarrassed. Only two, I said. Two? He asked, confused. Yes, I said, two words. Then I looked at the porgs over Trunk's head, and I shouted my two words. Bombs away!
Bombs, said Trunk, confused. What are you talking about? You don't have any bombs.
That is correct, I said. But they do, and I think I've been feeding them entirely too much today. Trunk turned to look where I indicated, and just at that moment, all those little porgies let loose at once. If you know what I mean. It was like a fall of snow from the sky. If snow were very stinky and sticky and altogether unpleasant. Splat, 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 splat! And Trunk, he was screaming and yelling, bombarded by the remains of all those little porgies' lunch. If he didn't like the porgs before, he really didn't like them then. He set off running back toward his ship, and the ship was rocking terribly, and he was slipping in the ick. And Hondo, oh, I was laughing so hard, but not so hard that I couldn't release the docking clamps holding my ship. And then, when they had finished their business, I raced with my feathered friends back to the Falcon. Straight to the cockpit I went, and into hyperspace we jumped, leaving Trunk's spaceship spinning out of control and, I am sure, in quite a messy state. I laughed with the porgs. It looks like everything worked out in the end. Okay, that was a bad pun, I admit it. But I was free. The Falcon was mine, and I was heading to Batuu. But I had a small pack of porgs following me everywhere I went. What to do with you, my little furry companions? I said to them. I must say, you are cute when someone gets to know you. Perhaps I could sell you as pets. Well, Puffy nipped my finger at that, just to let me know his opinion of my plan. Oh, you have sharp teeth for a birdie, I said. But I suppose that quashes the idea. Okay, Hondo promises no selling. I guess you've earned your place on the Falcon. Anyway, I think you're going to love it on Batuu.
Epilogue: The Corellian Gambit.
"Well, there you have it," said Hondo.
"That's it," said Basine. "You're done? That's all there is to say about your history with the Falcon?"
"All I feel like talking about today," replied the pirate. "But such fine stories, and most of the bits were true. If I were you, I would be very pleased."
"I'll be pleased when I have the ship," said Basine.
"And have it you shall, for the right price, of course."
The Weequay stood up from the table.
"Come with me," he said. "It is time we draw a line under our negotiations."
Hondo led Basine out of the cantina and into the streets of Blackspire Outpost. By then the day was nearly done. The light of the setting sun turned the petrified trees into long shadows that fell across the outpost like the fingers of giant ghosts reaching toward them from the past. The pirate led the mercenary to the spaceport. There a large facility had been built, partially carved out of the surrounding cliff wall. Towers and cupolas blended with rock-like spires, and a prominent flight tower sat above a large entrance at the base. On the tarmac, there was an enormous collection of cargo crates of various sizes and colors, lumped together alongside scattered tools and other maintenance equipment. Hondo pointed at the untidy jumble.
"May I present the Millennium Falcon," he said.
"What?" said Basine. "Where?"
"Oh," said Hondo, embarrassed. "I forgot."
Then he rummaged in a pocket and pulled out a small controller.
"See," he said, "I have a blinky-blinky-doo-hickey-too."
Hondo held up the controller and pressed a button. Suddenly, what looked like cargo crates began to fold up or deflate. Basine even thought she saw a few of them stand up and walk away on broad metal feet. When all the decoy crates had folded, shrunk, or ambled away, there it was.
"The Millennium Falcon," Hondo said, with a flourish of his hand. "Hide in plain sight, I always say."
Scuffed and scarred, battered and bruised, and yet somehow as splendid as one could imagine, it was almost impossible to believe it was really the Falcon. Basine was surprised despite herself. After such a long quest, she expected some sort of trick from the pirate. But no, there was the ship, the loading ramp invitingly lowered.
"After you," said Hondo, and they went inside.
The interior was every bit the mess she predicted it would be. Hondo may have fixed the Quadex power core, but he certainly hadn't done any cleaning. In fact, several small feathery creatures were nesting in various nooks and crannies.
"The porgs, I presume?" Basine asked.
"There's Puffy now," said Hondo,
indicating a fat little bird and smiling.
"Oh, and watch out," he added, pointing at another. "I call that one Snappy."
As if on cue, Hondo's finger strayed too close, and Snappy lunged for it. The Weequake pulled it back hurriedly.
"As you can see," Hondo said with a grimace, "Snappy and I are still working out the finer points of our relationship. Not going to miss him, I'll tell you that much."
Then he led Basine to the cockpit. Hondo sat in the pilot's chair. Then he spun to face her. He stretched his legs out languidly. The pose said, "This is still very much mine until you get what I want." Sure enough, he got right to the point.
"And now I name my price," he said.
Then he named a very large amount. Basine raised a perfectly groomed eyebrow. "You could buy a small fleet of YT-1300s for that," she said. "It's not like they're new ships."
"But you don't want the new ship, or even another YT-1300, said Hondo. "You want this one, and this one is very special. Special to me personally, as you now know. That raises the price. Also, I don't like dealing in credits, so that raises my price.